It's a hairbrush, Bernardo said. Oh. I looked at Edward. The only thing he'd changed was putting a white Kevlar vest under his undershirt and white shirt. He was even still wearing his cowboy hat. Olaf and Bernardo were both dressed in commando black and had backpacks that looked full. They were bristling with weapons, blacked so they didn't show up at night, but not hidden. I take it that the guys here aren't going in the front door with us, I said.
No,
Edward said. He hit the brakes, and Olaf and Bernardo slipped out of the car and into the darkness. Because I knew what I was looking for, I could see them in a running crouch going over the hill. But if you hadn't been looking, you'd have missed them. You're scaring me, Edward. I'm not like a commando raid James Bond kind of girl. Where the hell did you get a hairspray grenade?
A lot of female Secret Service now. It's a prototype.
Nice to know where my tax dollars are going. We were going down a long gravel driveway. There was a big house sitting up on a hill. Lights blazed out of the windows as if someone had gone through and hit every light, as if they were scared of the dark. If Riker really thought the monsters were coming, the analogy was accurate. Edward outlined his plan as we drove the last few yards. I was to pretend to do a spell of protection for Riker. While I delayed, Olaf and Bernardo would try to find the kids. If they couldn't find them or couldn't get them out, Olaf was supposed to find a man and kill him as messily as possible in a short space of time, leaving the body where it would be found and hope to make Riker think the monsters had already gotten inside. They might take us to the point where the monster kill had been found to get my expert advice, which would put us and whoever was with us, hopefully Riker, near where Olaf and Bernardo could help us kill them. If that failed, Bernardo would start blowing things up, which would create panic and hopefully allow us to find the kids. Unless Bernardo decided the structure wasn't sturdy enough to blow up and not cave in around us. Then we'd need another plan. Edward stopped the car at a gravel turnaround near the crest of the hill. Men armed with automatic submachine guns walked towards the car. None of them were Harold or Russell. They moved like Olaf and Edward moved, like predators.
You don't believe they're going to give back the kids, do you?
Do you?
He asked. He'd put his hands on the steering wheel at 10-2, in plain sight. I raised my hands in the air where they could be seen.
No, I said.
If the kids are okay, we'll do as little killing as possible. But if the kids aren't okay, it's zero survivors.
The police are going to find out about this one, Edward.
You will blow your Ted good old boy Forrester image all to hell.
If the kids don't make it out, I don't give a damn.
How will Olaf and Bernardo know whether to kill or not?
There's a wire worked into my vest. They've both got earpieces, so they'll be able to hear.
You're going to tell them to kill, I said.
If I have to.
The machine gun-toting men were at either side of the car. They made motions for us to get out. We did what they wanted, being sure to keep our hands in sight. We wouldn't want any misunderstandings.
Chapter 55.
The machine gun guy on my side wasn't that tall, 5'8" or maybe shorter, but his arms were corded with so much muscle that veins stood out against his skin like snakes. Some people vein up if they lift even a little, but most of the time you don't get that much popping up without some major effort. It was as if he was trying to make up for the lack of height by being obscenely strong. Most muscle-bound guys are slow and rarely know how to fight. They rely on sheer strength and just being a bully. But this one moved smoothly, almost gliding on his feet, sort of sideways, which hinted at some martial art training. He moved well, and his bicep was bigger than my neck. He was also pointing a very modern-looking submachine gun at me. Muscle-bound, trained fighter, and better armed than me. Weren't there rules against that?
Lean on the hood. Assume the position, he said.
I put my hands on the hood and leaned. The engine was still warm, not hot, but warm. Muscle Man kicked my legs.
Farther apart.
I did what he asked. I looked across the hood and met Edward's eyes. He was getting the same treatment on his side from a taller, slender man who wore silver frame glasses. Edward's eyes were at their empty, pitiless best. But somehow I knew he wasn't pleased. When I realized that, I realized I still had the sunglasses on, and my night vision was still good through dark lenses at night. Funny how neither Olaf nor Bernardo had asked in the car. There hadn't been time for many questions. The vampire vision had toned down, but it was still there, or I'd have been night-blind with the glasses on. Wondered what Muscle Man would think of the eyes. He kicked my right leg again, hard enough that it hurt.
I said lean!
He had that drill sergeant voice going. If I lean any farther, I'll be lying down. I felt him move behind me and had my head turned to the side when he slapped me in the back of the head, hard enough that my cheek hit the hood. It would have hurt if it had been the front, nose, mouth. He'd meant it to hurt.
Do what you're told and you won't get hurt.
I was beginning not to believe him, but I leaned, cheek pressed to the hood, arms out flat like I was being nailed down, feet spread so far that one good foot sweep would have dumped me to the ground. But it was nice and unsteady the way he wanted it, apparently. In a way, it was flattering. He was treating me as a dangerous person. A lot of bad guys don't. Usually they live to regret it, but not always. If Muscle Man died tonight, it wasn't going to be because of carelessness. He searched me, top to bottom, even running his fingers through my hair. He'd have found Bernardo's stiletto hairpins that the others had missed at the house. He took the sunglasses off and looked at them as if looking for things that I would never have thought to find in a pair of sunglasses. He didn't really look at my face, didn't catch the eyes, or maybe they weren't glowing black anymore. Muscle Man found everything but the transmitter that was sewn somewhere in the shirt, and the contents of the purse. He did dump it out on the ground and shine a flashlight on every item. He made sure the ink pen wrote, that the hairspray sprayed, and took the breath freshener mace as if he recognized it on sight. But that was all he took out of the purse, though once it was empty, he kneaded it with his left hand, the right still holding the submachine gun.
This wouldn't be one of those with a compartment for a gun, would it?
I'd raised my head enough to watch him empty the purse, so we could look at each other while he held the gun on me and glanced down at things. No, it wouldn't be.
I was betting it would be, he said.
Nope, I said. He finished by standing on the purse and stomping it flat. Glad it wasn't really my purse.
I guess there's no gun, he said.
Told ya. He took three big steps back out of reach. He was treating me like I was dangerous. Darn. I sometimes counted on passing for harmless, but I guess I'd been packing too much hardware to pass for anything but dangerous.
You can stand up.
I stood up. He tossed the sunglasses to me. I caught them. My eyes were in the light from the house now, but he never flinched. Apparently the glowy stuff had faded. He motioned with the gun for me to pick up the contents of the purse. I put everything back inside and almost put the sunglasses in, but decided to put them back on. Two reasons. One, when the night got too dark to wear them, I'd know the vampire stuff had left me completely. Two, knowing Edward, they were probably expensive, and I didn't want to get them scratched up. He motioned with the gun and said,
Just walk slow, straight to the house, and it'll be all right.
Why don't I believe you? I asked. He looked at me with eyes as dead and empty as a doll's.
I don't like smart mouths.
You'll have to wait until I do the spell before you can shoot me, I said.
So they tell me. Get moving.
The slender guy with glasses who had Edward at gunpoint was waiting for Muscle Man to get me moving. When I started walking, glasses moved Edward forward. They kept us walking side by side, telling us to stay together. They kept us together so that if they had to start shooting, they could kill us both with one spray of bullets. True professionals. I hoped Olaf and Bernardo were as good as they were supposed to be. If they weren't, we were in deep trouble. The house was one of those nouveau architect homes that people with more money than taste are always hiring people to build. It looked like a giant had dumped white concrete in a free-form slide, putting windows and doors here and there like raisins in an oatmeal cookie. A nice surprise, but never where you expect to find them. The mismatched windows made the house look deformed. The door was off-center but round, like a wide-open mouth. The windows were not only round and mismatched, but the number of windows didn't seem to match the floor plan, as if some of the windows looked into blank walls where no room could possibly be. White steps led up to the round door like one of those cartoon tongues that spill out of mouths and go tumbling downstairs. The steps weren't wide enough for us to walk side by side, so Edward moved a couple of steps ahead. Neither of the men behind us protested, so we kept moving. It had been so long since I carried a purse instead of a fanny pack that it felt awkward on my shoulder. I had to keep a hand on it to keep it from swinging around. I'd put it on the left shoulder, leaving my right hand uncompromised out of habit. Not that I had anything left to draw or pull or whatever. But it was always good to have your strong hand empty, just in case. So Edward and Dolph had always told me. At the top of the porch, in a spill of bright yellow light, they told us to stop. We stopped. They moved up to flank us and move a little back to either side. I didn't understand what they were doing at first, until the door opened and another man pointed the same kind of submachine gun at us. Muscle Man and Glasses had moved out of his line of fire and moved so they wouldn't catch him in their line of fire. It is not easy to use 3 submachine guns in that small a space without crossing your own men, but they made it look easy. Very smooth. The other men had carried an extra clip for the subguns in a thigh holster, but this one had 2 clips at his waist. The man in the door was African-American and tall, like Olaf's height, very 6-foot-plus. He was also completely bald, just like Olaf. If they'd ever met, they'd look like light and dark versions of each other.
"What took so long?" he asked.
His voice matched the body, deep.
"They were carrying a lot of hardware," Muscle Man said.
The new guy was smirking at me.
"From the way Russell talked, I expected you to look like Amanda. You're just a little bitch."
"Amanda the Amazon that came to Ted's house?" I asked. He nodded. I shrugged. I wouldn't believe much that Russell said.
"He said you broke his nose, kicked him in the balls, and beat his head in with a piece of wood."
Everything but the last bit. If I'd beaten his head in, he'd be dead.
"What's the holdup, Simon?" Muscle Man asked. "Deuce is having some trouble locating the wand."
"Deuce would have trouble keeping track of his head if it wasn't attached," Muscle Man said.
"True. But we still wait."
He was looking at both of us, the gun held easily in his big hands.
"What's with the sunglasses, bitch?"
I let the name-calling go. They had all the guns. "They look cool," I said. He laughed then, a warm, growly sound. A nice laugh if he hadn't been armed.
"What about you, Ted? I hear you are a bad dude."
Edward transformed into Ted, like a magician deciding he was going to have to perform after all.
"I'm a bounty hunter. I kill monsters."
Simon looked at him, and there was something about the way he did it that said the Ted act wasn't fooling him.
"Van Cleef recognized your picture, Undertaker."
"Undertaker?"
Ted smiled and shook his head.
"I don't know anybody named Van Cleef."
Simon just looked at Glasses. Edward had time to turn his head, so he took the blow on his shoulder. He moved a step, but didn't fall. Simon gave another look. Glasses hit his knee, and Edward collapsed onto one knee.
"We only need the girl up and running," Simon said. "So I'll ask you this just once. Do you know Van Cleef?"
I stood there, not sure what to do. We were so totally covered by the guns, and the priority had to be getting the children out. So no heroics until they were safe. If we died, I wasn't 100% sure that Bernardo and Olaf would risk their lives to get them out. So I stood there and looked at Edward kneeling on the porch, waiting for him to give me some kind of sign what I was supposed to do. Edward looked up at Simon.
"Yes." "Yes what, asshole?"
"Yes, I know Van Cleef." Simon smiled broadly, obviously happy with himself.
"Boys, this is the Undertaker, the man that still has the highest body count of anyone Van Cleef ever trained."
I felt rather than saw the two men twitch. The information not only made sense to them, but it scared them. It made them afraid of Edward. Who the hell was Van Cleef, and when had he trained Edward, and for what? I wanted to know the answers, but not badly enough to ask. Later, if we survived, I'd ask Edward. Maybe he'd even tell me.
"I don't know you," Edward said. "I came in just after you left," Simon said.
"Simon?" Edward made the name a question, and the big man seemed to understand what was being asked.
"As in whatever the fuck Simon says, you damn well better do."
How colorful, I thought, but didn't say out loud.
"Can I get up now?" Edward asked. "If you can stand, then help yourself."
Edward got to his feet. If it hurt, it didn't show. His face was empty, eyes like bits of pale blue ice. I'd seen him kill with that face. Simon's smile faltered around the edges.
"You're supposed to be one mean son of a bitch."
"Van Cleef never said I was mean." He sounded very sure of that. Simon's smile disappeared altogether.
"No, he didn't. He said you were dangerous."
"What would Van Cleef say about you?" Edward asked.
"Same thing," Simon said.
"I doubt that," Edward said.
They looked at each other, and there was a wait and a testing like something nearly visible in the air between them. Muscle Man's nerve broke first.
"Where the hell is Deuce with the wand?"
Simon blinked and switched very cold brown eyes to the man behind me.
"Shut up, Mickey."
Mickey? It didn't quite have the ring to it that the other nicknames did. Of course, Simon hadn't sounded too tough until it was explained.
Van Cleef didn't recognize her picture.
No reason he should, Edward said.
The newspapers call her the executioner.
That's what the vampires call her.
Why do they call her that?
Why do you think?
Simon looked at me. How many vampire kills you got, bitch?
If I had a chance tonight, I was going to teach Simon some manners, but not right now. I don't know exactly.
Guess.
I thought about it. I stopped keeping track around 30. Simon laughed.
Hell, every man on this porch has more kills than that.
More kills than 30? Who the hell were these guys? I shrugged. I didn't know it was a competition.
Did you count the human kills? Edward asked.
I shook my head. He asked about vampire kills, not human.
Add those in, he said.
That was harder. 11, 12 maybe?
43, Simon said. You got Mickey beat, but not Rooster.
Apparently Rooster was glasses.
Add in the shapeshifters, Edward said.
It had turned into a competition. I wasn't really sure that I wanted to seem as dangerous as I really was, but I trusted Edward's judgment. Oh, hell, Edward, I don't know. I started counting in my head. Finally, I said, 7.
So 50, he said.
Just hearing it out loud made me want to cringe. It sounded so Psychos R Us.
I still got you beat, bitch, Simon said.
He was beginning to get on my nerves. The 50 only counts the people I did personally with a weapon.
You mean it doesn't count the ones you killed barehanded?
He smiled when he said it, like he didn't believe it. No, I counted those. The smile got positively condescending.
Then what didn't you count, little bitch?
Witches, necromancers, things like that.
Why not count them?
This from Mickey. I shrugged.
Because using magic to kill is an automatic death sentence, Edward said.
I frowned at him. I never said anything about magic.
We aren't friends, Simon said. But you could be honest tonight, bitch. We won't tell the cops, will we, boys?
He laughed, and they laughed with him, with that same sort of nervous mirth that Itzpapalotl's vampires had had, like they were afraid not to laugh. I shrugged. Most of the 50 are sanctioned kills. The cops already know about them.
You ever been on trial?
This from the until now silent Rooster. No.
50 legal kills, Simon said.
Give or take, I said. Simon looked at Edward. They had another one of those weighted staring contests.
Would Van Cleef like her?
Yes, but she wouldn't like him.
Why not?
She's not big on orders and listening to people just because they've got an extra stripe on their shoulder.
Not disciplined, Simon said.
She's disciplined. You just gotta have more than rank to get her to listen to you.
She listens to you, Simon said. She didn't want to talk about her kills, but she took your lead.
His saying that meant Simon was very observant. Too observant for comfort, actually. I'd underestimated him. Stupid of me. No, not stupid. Careless. Another man came up with the identical gun in his hands. He was just shy of 6 feet, but seemed smaller, delicate somehow. The hair was a deep brown, cut short, curly. The face was pretty in a girlish kind of way. His skin was that dark tan that isn't really tan at all. He had a set of small headphones around his neck, with wires connecting them to a metal box and a small, flat wand attached with a cord to the box. It had to be Deuce and the wand. I didn't know what it was, but Edward went very still. He knew what it was, and he didn't like it. Not a good sign.
Where the fuck have you been? Mickey said. Mickey?
Simon said. And he said Mickey the way that Edward could say Olaf and get perfect obedience. There was no more comment from the backup players. Simon looked at Deuce.
Do it.
Deuce slipped the headphones on, hit a switch and some knobs on the box, and a light went on the box. He got a distracted inward look on his face, as if he were listening to things we couldn't hear. He started at Edward's hat and worked down, hesitated over the chest area, then continued the sweep. He knelt on the ground beside Edward and waved the wand up the backside of Edward. He was careful to stay out of the line of fire of all three guns. His own gun was on a sling that he pushed far behind his back, keeping it out of the way with a well-placed elbow as he moved. He stood, slipped the headphones off, and unplugged them from the box.
"Listen to this."
He waved the wand over Edward's chest. It beeped frantically.
"Take off the shirt," Simon said.
Edward didn't argue. He unbuttoned the shirt and handed it to Deuce, who waved the wand over it. The thing stayed silent. Deuce waved the wand over Edward's chest again, and the wand beeped. He ran the wand over the shirt in his hand, no noise. Deuce shook his head.
"The undershirt," Simon said.
Edward had to take his hat off. He handed it to me, then lifted the undershirt over his head. The Kevlar looked very artificial and white. He handed the undershirt to Deuce, and we went through the same routine again.
"Take the vest off," Simon said.
"Tell me one thing first," Edward asked.
"Are the kids all right?"
"Why the fuck do you care about some bitch's kids?"
Edward just looked at him, but there was something in the look that made Simon take a step back. He'd noticed what he'd done, and took the step back, pointing the gun very solidly at Edward's chest.
"Take off the damn vest."
"It's too hot for body armor anyway," Edward said.
It seemed an odd thing to say for Edward, man of few words, but you had to know Edward to know it was odd. I had the feeling that Edward had just put the word out for zero survivors. He undid the Velcro, slipped it over his head, and handed it to Deuce. Edward stood there naked from the waist up. He looked fragile beside the muscle-bound Mickey or the very tall Simon, but they saw in him what I saw in him, because unarmed and half-naked, they were still scared of him. It was there in the way Simon reacted to him, the way the others except Deuce kept their distance. Deuce didn't seem to be working on the same instincts as the rest, though he never once crossed the fire line. He made Edward stretch out his hand, or he knelt under the direct line of fire. None of them were careless. It wasn't a good sign. He ran the wand over the vest. When the wand beeped, he handed it to Simon. Then he ran the wand over Edward's bare chest. Silence.
Good, because I think Simon would have said, "skin," in the same voice he'd said shirt, undershirt, vest.
Just because Edward made him nervous didn't mean he wasn't scary all of his own.
"In the body armor. That's good," Simon said. "Most people, even if they have you stripped, don't check the armor."
Edward just looked at him.
"Her next."
Deuce duck-walked in front of us. Just in case someone started shooting, he was safe. No one shot anyone. Of course, the night was young. He stood on the other side of me. He didn't bother to put the earphones back on, just ran the wand over me. It beeped.
"Hand the hat back to him, please."
"Please?" Refreshing after hearing myself called bitch about a dozen times. "My pleasure," I said, and handed Edward's hat back to him. Deuce had looked up when I spoke, as if he wasn't used to politeness in others either. The wand ran over me, and it beeped at chest level.
"Take the shirt off, bitch," Simon said.
I untucked the shirt and started unbuttoning it. "My name's Anita, not bitch."
"Like I give a fuck," he said.
"Fine." I tried being nice. I handed the shirt to Deuce and his magic wand. It beeped, but when he ran it back over me, nothing. He laid the box gently on the ground, the wand on top of it, and started looking at the shirt. In less than a minute, he'd found a small wire with a slightly thicker head sewn into the collar of the shirt.
"Looks like a transmitter. Maybe a homing beacon."
Simon tossed the vest to Deuce.
"Cut it open. Find out what's inside."
Deuce pulled a gravity knife from his back pocket, did one of those quick wrist movements that spilled the blade open. He went over the vest with his hands first, eyes closed, then he started cutting. It was a longer wire with a little box attached.
"It's a receiver. Someone out there is hearing everything we say. Destroy the Homer."
Deuce crushed mine under his heel. When it was a little metallic and plastic slimy place on the porch, he smiled up at us as if he'd done a good thing.
Deuce was a few bricks shy of a load.
Funny how many people that Edward introduced me to were.
"Who's out there, Undertaker?" Simon asked.
Edward had put his hat back on. It looked funny with the shirt gone, but he seemed perfectly at ease. If he was nervous, you couldn't tell it.
"I'm gonna ask you this one more time nice, then it won't be so nice."
He seemed to square his shoulders as if he were the one about to take a beating.
"Who was on the other end of this wire? Who's out there?"
Edward shook his head. Simon nodded.
Rooster hit him in the back, and it must have been hard because it drove him to his knees. Something on the butt of the gun broke the skin in two small cuts. He stayed on all fours for a few seconds as if it had stunned him, then he got up on his feet and faced Simon.
Answer the question, Undertaker.
Edward shook his head again. He was ready for the next blow. It staggered him, but he didn't go down. There was a third small cut. The cuts weren't anything, but they showed how much force was being used. He was going to be bruised all to hell come morning.
Maybe she knows, Mickey said.
I don't know who they are, I said, and the lie fell smoothly off my tongue. Edward said we needed backup. He found some.
You'd come into a situation like this with unknown people at your back? You don't seem that stupid, Simon said.
Edward vouched for them, I said.
And you trust him?
I nodded.
You trust him with your life?
Yes, I said. Simon looked at me, then back to Edward.
She your squeeze?
Edward blinked, and I knew that was him trying to buy time to think what answer would be the least painful.
No. I'm not sure I believe you, either of you, but if we start beating up the bitch and she gets too hurt to do the spell, Riker'd be pissed.
Why don't you have Undertaker ask the backup to come in? Deuce said.
Everyone sort of froze, then looked at him. Simon said,
What did you say?
If they can hear us, why not have him ask them to come up? Hands up, that sort of thing.
Simon nodded, then turned back to Edward.
Tell them to come up to the house, hands where we can see them.
They won't come, Edward said.
They'll come or we'll blow your fucking head off.
Simon put the short-butted gun to his shoulder and put the barrel against Edward's forehead.
Ask them to come into the house. Hands up. Throw their guns down.
It was funny how Simon had never once thought it might be the police out there, as if he didn't believe the Undertaker would bring the police to the party. Edward stared down the barrel of that gun, looked past it, into Simon's eyes, and the look was his usual look. His eyes were cold and empty as winter skies. There was no fear. There was no anything. It was like he wasn't there at all. Edward may have been calm, but I wasn't. I'd seen enough bad men to know that Simon meant it. More than that, he wanted to do it. He'd feel safer if Edward were dead. I was out of ideas, but I couldn't just stand here and watch it happen.
Tell them, Undertaker, or I will blow your head all over this porch.
Even if I asked, they wouldn't come.
Simon pressed the barrel in so that Edward had to brace his feet against it to keep from being pushed backwards.
You better hope they come. We don't need you alive, just her.
I need him alive, I said. Simon's eyes flicked to me, then settled back on Edward.
Lying bitch.
Are you a witch, Simon? I asked, though I knew the answer. I'd have spotted it if he had been a practitioner.
What the fuck does that matter?
Then you don't know what I need to do this spell, do you? Your boss would be pissed if you blew away someone I needed to keep him safe from the monsters.
Why do you need him? Deuce asked.
I swallowed and tried to think.
Nothing good was coming.
I tried for truth. When I'm out of other options, it still works. Riker said he wouldn't hurt the kids. He said he wouldn't hurt us. He said he just wanted me to save him from the monster. If you blow Ted's brains into the next county, then I'm not going to believe any of Riker's other promises. The second I think that Riker is going to kill the kids and us once I do the job, then I don't have any incentive to help him.
Simon's eyes flicked to me again. We can give you incentive.
I didn't see him nod, but I felt Mickey moving behind me. I've never been good at taking a blow. I moved without thinking and he missed my shoulder, but I'd been right. He knew how to fight. I was turning towards him to do what, I'm not sure, when the butt of the gun caught me on the chin. I think I'd made him mad by ducking because he hit me hard. The next thing I knew, I was on the ground looking up. Deuce was kneeling by me, stroking my face. I had the impression he'd been petting me for a while, as if I'd passed out. I didn't remember passing out. The sunglasses were gone. I didn't know if Deuce took them off, or if they flew off when my head went back.
She's awake, Deuce said, voice sort of dreamy.
He gave me a gentle smile and kept stroking my face. Simon knelt by me, blocking out the light.
What's your name?
Anita. Anita Blake.
How many fingers?
I watched his hand move back and forth, following it with my eyes.
Two. Can you sit up?
It was a good question. With help, maybe. Deuce put his arm behind my back and lifted me. I let him take a lot of the weight, not because it was necessary, but because them thinking I was more hurt than I was might make them think I was less of a threat. We needed some sort of edge. I rested against Deuce's shoulder. He was humming something tuneless under his breath, his hand cupping my face, stroking the skin over and over. I was finally able to see everything. Edward was on his knees with his hands clasped on top of his cowboy hat. Rooster had a gun touching his head. Edward didn't look hurt. More like they'd done it to keep him from doing anything heroic. Mickey had a bloody lip. He was carefully not making eye contact with anyone.
"Can you stand?" Simon asked.
"With help, yeah."
"Deuce?"
Deuce helped me to my feet, and the world wavered. I clung to Deuce, hands digging in as the world tried to slide out my ear. Maybe I wasn't pretending to be hurt.
"Shit," Simon said. "Can you walk if Deuce helps you?"
I started to nod, and that made me nauseated. I had to breathe through it before I could answer him.
"I think so."
"Good. Let's go."
He backed into the house, eyes watching the darkness beyond, though with all the lights, his night vision was probably shit. Deuce and I went next. He had Edward's wire hung around his neck like a doctor's stethoscope. Edward was next, hands still firmly on top of his head. Rooster, then Mickey bringing up the rear. They staggered us so that if someone started shooting, there was room to maneuver. Simon started up a flight of stairs. I looked up the long flight and the world swam. Deuce called,
"Simon, I'm not sure she's up to
stairs." "Mickey?"
The man in question moved up to the foot of the stairs.
"Carry her."
"I don't want him touching me," I said.
"I didn't ask either of you," Simon said.
Mickey gave his gun to Simon, then took my arm. He pulled me too fast, and I was suddenly airborne on his shoulder, my head hanging down. I couldn't breathe. The world was spinning, and I was going to be sick.
"I'm going to throw up."
He dumped me unceremoniously back to my feet, and I fell. It was Simon who caught me.
"Are you too hurt to do the spell?"
I knew the answer to that one.
No.
Because if Riker thought I couldn't help him, he would kill us all. I can do it if Mickey here doesn't dangle me over his shoulder with my head hanging down. I need to stay upright or it's not going to get any better.
"Carry her in your arms, not over your shoulders," Simon said. "All those muscles gotta be good for something."
Mickey picked me up in his arms like you'd carry a small child. He stood there like I weighed nothing. He was strong, but carrying like this is harder than it looks. We'd see how he did if there was more than one floor to climb. Here's hoping he didn't drop me. I put my arm around his shoulders. I'd have clasped hands around his neck to be more secure, but I couldn't reach around his deltoids without straining.
"How much do you bench press?"
390.
"I'm impressed," I said.
He preened a little. Mickey was dangerous, but if I could keep him from hitting me, he was the weak one. Rooster followed orders too well. Simon was Simon. Deuce seemed harmless, but there was something in those dreamy eyes that was a little scary. Maybe I was wrong, but I'd try Mickey before I tried Deuce, for trickery anyway. Arm wrestling? I'd take Deuce. Mickey walked up the stairs with me in his arms, effortlessly. I could feel the muscles in his legs pushing, working. Again, I had the sense of immense physical potential and quickness. "What's Mickey mean?" I asked.
"Nothing."
Simon explained his nickname. "I'm just wanting to know what yours means." Deuce answered.
"It's for Mickey Mouse."
"Shut up, Deuce."
"He's got a tattoo of Mickey on his butt,"
Deuce said as if Mickey hadn't spoken. Mickey's face darkened, and he turned to glare at the other man. I just fought to keep my face blank. What kind of moron would have Mickey Mouse tattooed on his butt? But not out loud, not with those tree trunk arms wrapped around my tender body. If I hadn't had the marks on me, he'd have probably killed me with that one blow. No, I didn't want Mickey angry with me. There was a landing and a second flight of stairs. Mickey didn't even hesitate on the landing. He just went for the next set of stairs. His legs moved as easily up the second set as the first. He never paused to catch his breath. In fact, his breathing barely sped up. Whatever you could complain about Mickey, being out of shape wasn't part of it. I told him so. "How far you jog a day?"
5 miles every other day.
"How'd you know?" A lot of bodybuilders would be having trouble by now. They neglect the aerobic stuff, but you move like some kind of well-oiled machine. You're not even breathing hard. There was something very intimate about being carried in someone's arms like this. A reminder of childhood, and your parents' arms, maybe. Mickey's hands tightened on me. The one on my thigh began to massage my leg. I didn't tell him not to. It's been my experience that if a man is interested in having sex with you, they hesitate to kill you before they've had the sex. This rule is not always true, but more often than not. The trick is to get the man thinking more about sex than violence, so he's a little confused. We needed a little confusion among our enemies right now. We were in a wide white hallway that ran the length of the top of the house. There were white doors with silver knobs. Nothing differentiated one door from the other. Simon went to the farthest door, and Mickey followed with me in tow. I could see Deuce following, and Edward just topping the last stairs with Rooster behind him, walking well back out of arms or legs length. These guys were good. I got into where I counted on the bad guys not being this good. Even if they were vampires and werewolves, they'd be unprofessional. But I'd never been around professional bad guys that were this professional. It cut our options from bad to worse. Simon opened the door. We were here. We were still alive. The night still had possibilities. Chapter 56. Mickey sat me down near the middle of a very nice Persian rug. He kept an arm around my shoulder, as if it had been his idea to carry me. I gave his arm a squeeze before I stepped away from him. Didn't want to be slutty, but wanted him hopeful in case it was useful. The room looked like the study of a prosperous academic. There were antique maps framed on the walls. Shelves lined almost every extra space of wall, a lot of books that looked well-read and well-used. There were books open on the big leather-top desk with bookmarks in them and sticky notes covered in writing, as if we'd interrupted someone's research. A man sat behind the desk. He was a big man, both tall and wide. Not fat exactly, but headed that way. He rose from his chair with a smile and walked towards us, hand outstretched. He moved with a confident, easy stride, like an ex-athlete going soft with normal living. His dark hair was cut very short and mostly bald on top. His hands were big, and the new weight showed in the hands where a college ring was beginning to cut into his flesh. He had calluses on his hands, like he wasn't afraid to do the real work himself, but the calluses were losing that hard edge, softening, smoothing back into his skin. He'd probably done some of his dirty work once, but no more. He gripped my hand with both of his, when one of his hands could have swallowed both of mine. "So glad you're here, Miss Blake." He said it like I'd been invited instead of blackmailed. "I'm glad one of us is glad I'm here," I said. The smile widened and he let my hand go. "I am sorry for our little theatrics. Simon called up and said he thought Mickey had broken your neck. So happy that he exaggerated." "Not by much, Mr. Riker." "Are you feeling well enough to do the spell? We could have some tea first, let you rest." I managed to smile. "I am grateful that we're being all civilized, and coffee would be great, but where are the children?" His eyes flicked past me to Edward. He still had his hands clasped on top of his hat, but at least they hadn't made him kneel again. "Ah, yes, the children." I didn't like the way he said it, like it was going to be bad news. "Where are they?" Edward asked, and Rooster hit him in the back with the gun again. It staggered him, and he had to wait for it to pass before he straightened up. His hands never left his head, as if he knew they were looking for an excuse to hurt him again. "You promised us that they wouldn't be harmed," I said.
"You were late," Riker said.
"No," Edward said. "Don't," I said, as Rooster raised his arm back for another blow. He did it anyway.
"Fuck."
I turned back to Riker. "Every cruel thing you do helps convince me that you have no intention of any of us getting out of here alive."
"I assure you, Miss Blake, that I intend to let you go."
"What about the others?" He gave a small shrug and walked back behind his desk.
"Unfortunately, my men think that Mr. Forrester is too dangerous to be allowed to live. I do regret that."
He sat down in his nice swivel chair, elbows on the chair arms, thick fingers steepled.
"But he will serve a useful purpose before he dies. If you are reluctant, we will take it out on Mr. Forrester. Since we intend to kill him anyway, we can do anything we want to him, and it doesn't really matter."
My stomach was a hard knot, my pulse beating in my throat hard enough that I had to try twice to talk. "What about the kids?"
"Do you really care?"
"I'm asking, aren't I?" He reached behind the desk and pressed something. The rear walls of the room slid open, revealing enough equipment to make NASA proud. There were four blank TV screens, but somehow I didn't think this was Riker's new digital television system.
What the hell is all that for? I asked.
That is not really your concern. I have signaled for additional men to be brought up. When they arrive, then I will show you the children.
Why the additional men? I asked.
You'll see, he said.
We didn't have long to wait. Four men came through the door. Two I recognized. Harold of the scarred face, and Newt, who I'd nearly made a soprano. Harold had a shotgun, and Newt his big nickel-plated .45. But it was the two men behind them that were the problem. One was tall, and planed down to nothing but muscle and dark burnished skin. He didn't have Mickey's bulk, but he didn't need it. He entered the room surrounded by a cloud of his own violent potential. He set my lizard sense screaming, as if it knew here was someone to avoid. He had the same gun the other pros were carrying, but he'd added knives. At his forearms, his upper arms, both hips, and even hilts sticking up from behind his shoulders. It was very primitive somehow, and very effective. If he'd walked into a cell, you might have dropped to your knees and begged for mercy. The other one was just medium height, medium brown hair cut short, not too dark, not too light, not too anything. He had a face that you wouldn't remember 2 seconds after you saw it, because he was not handsome enough or ugly enough to stand out. He was one of the most unmemorable people I'd ever seen, and yet when his brown eyes swept over me, met mine for a second, I felt a jolt all the way down to my feet. One flash and I knew that of the two men, he would kill you quicker. He had the same submachine gun the others had, but paired with what looked like a 10-mil automatic. I didn't recognize the brand. My hands aren't big enough for a 10-mil, so I don't pay that much attention.
Simon, I want two men on both of our guests.
Make it four on him, Simon said.
I bow to your expertise.
Rooster made Edward get on his knees. Simon made Mickey go to Edward. I guess he didn't want to risk the muscle man hitting me again. If they killed Edward early, they still had the kids to blackmail with. Simon sent the medium man to Edward, and Simon himself took up a post by Edward. They thought he was a very dangerous man, and they were right. The nausea had been fading, but all the preparations were making me nervous. I was afraid of what we were going to see. If they hadn't been afraid to show us, they wouldn't have had four men on Edward. I was left with Deuce and the knife guy. Harold and Newt stayed near the door. Harold seemed nervous. Deuce touched my arm, tracing the mound of scar tissue at my elbow.
What did it?
Vampire. He raised his shirt up, and his stomach was a mass of white scars.
Mortar round.
I wasn't sure what I was supposed to say. But I was saved from the decision because the knife guy grabbed my arm and turned me to look at Riker. He kept his hand on my arm, and since his hand completely encircled my upper arm, it wasn't going to be easy to get away.
Showtime, Riker said.
He hit another switch, and two of the monitors flickered to life. Black and white film of cells. At first, all I saw was Russell's back in one room, and the Amazon Amanda's back in the other room. Then my eyes saw legs sticking out from around the woman. Legs in jeans and jogging shoes, ankles tied together. Too big for Becca. Had to be Peter. She'd stripped down to the waist, and that broad, muscular back made everyone in this room look frail except for Mickey. It was only the length of her hair that made me guess her. She leaned forward, revealing more of Peter's body. She'd pulled his jeans and underwear down to his knees. She was playing with him. I looked at the floor, then back up. She tried to kiss him, and when he turned his head away, she slapped him twice, hard, first one cheek, then the other. There was already blood on his mouth as if it wasn't the first time she'd hit him. She leaned back in for the kiss, revealing small, tight breasts to the camera. She kissed him, and this time he let her. Her hand never stopped working on his body. I turned slowly to look at the other monitor.
Please, God, please don't let Russell be doing the same thing to Becca.
He wasn't, and I was grateful. He'd turned with her on his lap, as if he knew he had an audience to play to now. He cradled her like you'd hold any small child, but he'd pinned one small arm, and two of the fingers on the tiny hand were at a bad angle. He broke a third finger while we watched, and her mouth opened in a soundless scream.
"Shall we have sound?" Riker asked.
Becca was screaming high and piteous. Russell cradled her and murmured soothing things. He stroked her hair and looked directly at the camera. His nose was still packed and bandaged. He knew we were there.
Peter's voice came high. He'd never sounded more like a little boy.
Please don't! Please, stop!
His arms were tied behind his back, but he was still struggling. She slapped him.
It'll feel good, I promise.
I looked at Edward. Simon had the gun against his head. The hat was on the ground. The medium-looking man had conjured a knife from somewhere and had it pressed to Edward's throat. A trickle of blood slid down his skin. I met his eyes, and I knew that everyone in this room, everyone in this house, was dead. They just didn't know it yet. Edward started to say something, but Simon said,
No. No talking from you, or Shooter will slit your throat.
The medium guy must be Shooter. The name didn't suit him. He looked more like a Tom, Dick, or Harry. They wouldn't let Edward talk, so it was my play, but we both knew where the game would end. Sudden death. Get them out of there, Riker.
The children?
He gave a questioning lilt to his voice. Order them to leave the kids alone, now.
And if I don't?
I smiled. Then the monster is going to come in here and gut you. His eyes flinched. That bothered him. Good.
Knowing what is happening to them should speed up the spell of protection, I think.
If you don't stop it, Riker, there won't be anything left to salvage.
I don't know. I think the boy is enjoying himself from the sound of things.
I'd been trying not to hear, but Peter's breath was coming faster and faster, frantic, but it wasn't the sound of pain. He screamed,
Don't! Please don't!
I looked and wished I hadn't. Some sights cut through your mind, leaving a scar behind that never really heals. Watching Peter writhe, caught between his first pleasure and the horror of it all, was one of those sights. I pride myself on never flinching. If someone is being tortured, I don't look away. To look away only saves me pain, not them. If I can't save them the pain, then I watch as a kind of respect and as a punishment for myself, to remind me what happens to people when I fail them. But I failed Peter twice, because I looked away, just before a wordless scream tore from his mouth. It wasn't the sound of pain. I turned away, and maybe I moved too fast for the head injury, or maybe it was something else, because the room swam in streamers of color. I tried to go to my knees, and the knife man jerked my arm, kept me on my feet. Fine. I threw up on him. He jerked back, actually let go of my arm. I fell to my knees, grateful to be low to the ground. Throwing up had brought a roaring headache. Riker's voice came through the next wave of nausea.
Amanda? Russell, be so good as to leave the children alone. Our Miss Blake is too squeamish to do her work while she fears for their safety.
I looked up at the monitors to be sure they actually left the rooms. Russell kissed Becca on the head, then left her huddled in the corner, crying for her mommy. Amanda blindfolded Peter while he begged her not to. She whispered something in his ear that caused him to curl into a ball. She left his pants down, picked up her shirt from the floor, and walked out. I huddled into my own version of a ball on the floor. I stayed on my knees while I tried to decide whether I was going to throw up again or not. Nausea like this is usually a sign of a concussion. The headache was another. But I think sheer nerves had pushed me over the edge. I used to throw up at crime scenes quite a bit. Apparently there were still things I couldn't handle, like child abuse. Dear God, please give us some help here. Help us get them out of here safe. There was a beeping, and Riker hit another button on his desk.
What is it?
We've got two dead down here. They were fucking butchered.
Riker went pale.
The monster. Knives. Some kind of fucking big knife.
You're sure of that? Riker asked.
You are positive.
Yes, sir.
It seems we have intruders.
He looked at Simon.
What are you going to do about our company, Simon?
Kill them, sir.
Then do it.
Shooter, Rooster, stay with him and kill him as soon as Riker gives the word. Mickey, you're with me.
He looked across at the two men by me.
You stay with her. Make sure no one else hits her. Harold, Newt, come with me.
Then they were gone, and we were down to two bad guys apiece, and Riker. It would never get better than this. Is there a bathroom? I asked.
Are you going to be ill again?
It's a thought.
The two of you take her. And Deuce, if you can come up with something creative that won't leave a mark or physically harm Ms. Blake in any way, but will convince her that the children and Mr. Forrester are not the only ones that can be hurt, do so. Perhaps you can show her your namesake. You've got 30 minutes. There aren't a lot of things you can do to a person that fulfilled Riker's requirements. The ones I could think of were mostly sexual. Usually the talk of my impending rape upsets me, but all I could think of now was that I had 30 minutes with 2 men who might want to fuck me more than kill me. All I wanted to do was kill them. It made my options easier. But I said, "Is there a reason for torturing me too, or is it just a hobby?" He smiled, pleasant, confident.
"I thought you would be worthy of my men, but I find you weak, Ms. Blake.
Weakness should be punished.
But it must be done carefully, so you can still do the spell, because I do want that."
"Isn't the line, these things must be done delicately or you injure the spell?" Deuce laughed. Riker frowned at me.
"It's from the Wizard of Oz," Deuce said. "The Wicked Witch of the West says it to Dorothy."
"Take her away, Deuce," he wrinkled his nose. "And clean yourself up, Blade. You're welcome to help in the punishment, but Deuce is in charge. I don't want her damaged." Deuce grabbed my arm almost gently and helped me to my feet. The guy I'd thrown up on, Blade, followed us by a few steps. Evidently, he was taking no chances. At the door, a man appeared. He was darkly Hispanic with longish hair, a shoulder holster, complete with 9mm automatic. He looked like local hired muscle, but he wasn't. He vibrated with power. A shimmering energy flowed off of him. Psychic, or maybe more. "Ms. Blake, meet our resident expert on the supernatural, Alario. He was in charge of the protection spells on all my establishments. His art failed him recently at one of my shops, and my workers are dead. You will succeed where he has failed." Alario watched me with cool, dark eyes. His power flared over mine as Deuce led me past him. We recognized each other as powers, but there wasn't time for anything else. But there would be later, which was what I was afraid of. Alario was the real deal, a practitioner of the arts. He'd figure out pretty quickly that I didn't know shit about spells of protection, at least not the kind Riker wanted. Deuce led me down the white hall with Blade trailing us. We were out of time. I couldn't go back into that room and fake a spell. Olaf had failed to make his kills horrendous enough to fool the bad guys. The only good thing he'd done was divide their forces, and I had to take advantage of that while it lasted. Which meant that if at all possible, only one person was coming back from the bathroom. Hopefully, it would be me.
Chapter 57.
It was one of those bathrooms with a double sink separate from the rest of the bathroom. Deuce led me into the little bathroom area, complete with shower. I managed to do some dry heaving, but that was the best I could do, and even that made my head ache. It hurt so much I closed my eyes, trying to keep my brains from leaking out through them. If it wasn't a concussion, it was a hell of an imitation. Deuce wet a washcloth and gave it to me.
"Thanks."
I put it over my face and tried to think. So far, Deuce hadn't touched me. Blade was trying to clean up in the sink area, but he'd want the shower soon.
"I love the look on Blade's face when you puked on him. It was priceless."
I put the wash rag to the back of my neck. I was thinking furiously about what was in the purse and what options I had. But my voice was calm, point for me. "Blade? As in the comic book character?" He nodded.
"Yeah, the vampire killer. They both carry knives."
"And they're both African-American," I said.
"Yeah."
I looked into his face, washcloth that he'd so kindly given me still on my neck. I tried to read behind those pleasant, slightly dreamy brown eyes, but it was like trying to read Edward. I just couldn't read between the lines. "I think that Blade actually used wooden knives and like a crossbow in the comic books," I said. Deuce shrugged.
"You're either very brave, or you don't think I'll hurt you."
"I believe you'll hurt me if you want to."
"Then you're brave," he said.
He was leaning against the wall, fingers playing lightly with the gun on its sling at his shoulder. It was my turn to shrug. "Yeah, but it's not really bravery that's keeping me calm." He looked interested for the first time.
"What is?"
"After what I saw being done to Becca and Peter, I just can't get too excited about myself." Blade banged on the door.
"We don't have all night and I want a shower."
Deuce and I both jumped when he banged on the door. We shared one of those embarrassed smiles, then he opened the door and ushered me through. Blade had tried to scrub at his clothes in the sink, but it hadn't helped. He tried to go through the door, and Deuce stepped in his way.
"Riker won't like you taking a shower. He told me to get cleaned up. Simon told us to keep 2 people on her.
We can't do that if you're in the shower.
Blade looked at me. I think Simon overestimated her. Anyone that throws up after seeing mild torture like that, I'm not afraid of. Now get out of my way, Deuce.
Deuce moved to one side, moving just ahead and to one side of him. Blade brushed past us without a word, his anger trailing behind him like a loose coat. He slammed the door behind him. I went to the sink and re-wet the washcloth. He was watching me in the mirror now. His eyes were still pleasant, but something else had crept in. Something that promised pain, the way the wind can bring the smell of rain against your skin just before it starts to pour. I started fishing in the purse. I've got some breath stuff in here somewhere.
I could lock you in the room with Blade. He strips real pretty, and he's not very happy with you right now.
My hand closed on the pen with its hidden blade. You really think he could control himself enough to just rape me and not do other damage? Like you said, he's not very happy with me.
You never asked about my nickname, he said.
The conversation was moving too fast for me. I assumed it was some kind of card-playing thing. He shook his head while I watched him in the mirror. Then he started unzipping his pants. He was too far away to touch me, or for me to fight back. All I could do was wait for him to come to me. He slipped inside his open fly and lifted himself out in a smooth, practiced movement. He was huge, impressive, even limp and soft. If I hadn't seen Bernardo earlier, I'd have been more impressed. Of course, you could never be 100% sure how big a man got when he was erect. Some barely changed size. Some grew a lot. Maybe he'd been very impressive. Then I realized he had a tattoo on it. I had to turn and look, rather than trust to the mirror. Am I supposed to run screaming or ask to touch it? I wasn't even scared. It was too bizarre.
Which do you want to do?
I admit I was having a hard time looking at his face and not his penis, because it was growing, and I could see the tattoo more clearly.
Can't rape the willing, hey?
He smiled as if this approach had worked before with women. It was certainly something a girl didn't get offered every day.
I won't tell if you don't.
Is that the two of hearts on your... penis? His smile widened. Didn't that hurt?
Not as much as it's going to, Deuce said.
He moved slowly towards me so I could get a good look. He had a flair for theatrics, did Deuce. I didn't want him using his flair or anything else on me. I turned and stumbled on purpose. He caught me, as he'd caught me all the other times. I put the pen against his chest, just under the sternum, angled upward. I was a vampire hunter. If there was one thing I knew how to do, it was to find the heart with the first blow. I pressed the button the second I touched him. There was no upward movement, no feel of shoving the blade, because the blade did its own work. His eyes went wide, mouth opened, but no sound came out. I twisted the blade left, then right, making sure he'd never draw breath to warn the man in the other room. Deuce started to slide down the cabinets. I caught him and lowered him gently to the floor, glad he was one of the smaller men. I'd have had trouble wrestling Mickey's body around. The water was still running in the shower. Blade probably wouldn't have heard the sound of the body hitting the ground over the shower, but better safe than sorry. Deuce lay there on the floor, the blade sticking out of his chest, his pants still unzipped, his namesake naked to the world. He looked very sad lying there dead. If I had time before I left, I'd zip him up. But first, Blade. I got the gun off Deuce's shoulder and put the sling around my shoulder. I checked to make sure I knew where the safety was and that it was off. The switch on the side had three settings, not just two like the Uzi. I put the setting on high. Logic said it would make the most bullets come out in the shortest space of time. I got Deuce's extra clip for the sub-gun. A clip only holds 20 rounds. Normally that sounded like a lot, but not tonight. There wasn't enough ammo in the world to make me feel safe tonight. I put the extra clips for both sub-guns and the handguns in the purse and crossed the purse straps across my chest. Deuce's backup was a 9mm Glock. Personally, I find Glocks awkward to shoot, though I know people that swear by them once the learning curve was over at the firing range. But I was happy to see this one. The guns were great, but they would make a lot of noise. If I shot Blade, it would bring the rest of the bad guys down on me, and worse yet, they might kill Edward before coming after me. They had three hostages. They only needed one. I needed something quiet. Trouble was, I didn't think I could take Blade with a blade. Hand to hand, forget it. That left me with the contents of the purse. I pulled the blade out of Deuce's chest. Blood welled up darker than most, like heart blood is supposed to be. I cleaned the blade automatically on a sleeve of his shirt and slipped it into my front pocket. One of his hands was lying against the cabinet doors far under the sink. Maybe I did have more than just what was in the purse. I moved